at 1230 AM, W255DN, Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. The Justice Department slaps former FBI Director James Comey with two felony counts of making false statements and obstruction of justice. Comey responding in an online video.
I'm not afraid, and I hope you're not either. I hope instead you are engaged, you are paying attention, and you will vote.
Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
It's not a surprise that they were able to get the indictment against James Comey, but there's a long way to go before getting a conviction.
CBS's Scott McFarland says the Trump administration was under pressure to file charges in a case that stems from testimony he gave several years ago about an FBI investigation into 2016 election interference by the Russians.
5 years after the incident, the statute of limitations is 5 years for these charges. They had to charge him before Tuesday or they couldn't at all.
Comey's arraignment is scheduled for October 9th. CBS News Special Report. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
98.9 WXCO, Wausau's real news and great conversation, and home for the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
It's the Packers and the Cowboys. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers play the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. Jordan Love says they learned some tough lessons in Cleveland during their loss to the Browns.
Every week is opportunity to learn and grow and experience things as a team. And obviously, I think defense did a great job last week. Offensively, special teams, we didn't do enough.
Baseball, the Brewers have tonight off after beating the Padres 3-1 in San Diego. Aaron Ashby awarded the win. Abner Uribe got the save. Pat Murphy.
Nobody's mentioned Jansen yet. You guys paying attention to the game? He caught the whole game. He caught six different pitchers. A walk, a hit, and a homer. I thought he was great.
Yeah, catcher Danny Jansen out of West High School in Appleton, Wisconsin, on coming back to Milwaukee against the Reds with the magic number down to one.
Yeah, it feels great. Good momentum going home for the final three games. In front of our home crowd, it's going to be amazing.
That's the Brewers' Danny Jansen with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons, like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
This is Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. So Kimmel back on the air, at least on most of the stations that he was on. Sinclair Broadcasting, I guess, chose not to air him, which, look, that's their right. You know who they are. And this is one of those things where, as consumers, you know who they are. And the next bit of organizing this is to hold them accountable for that choice. This is the power of we the people. But here's the thing. There are other options. And somewhat 7 million people, according to Fast Company, went over to YouTube to check out the opening monologue there of Jimmy Kimmel's on his first night back. People flocking to where it's going to be at. And this is where I think our big media companies better try and figure out what they're going to be doing, because in this day and age, there had been the rumor running around that Maddow, Kimmel, and Colbert all came together and created a media empire. Didn't happen. But, could. There could be a moment where people go, you know what, we're going to start independent media. We're going to invest heavily in independent media. Something that we desperately, desperately need. Now, the opening monologue I thought was very good. I thought he hit the right tones of being a little conciliatory, being human, being a little, having a little humility, a little decency, and admitting, look, there are people that I agree with. There are people I don't agree with. There are people that I care about that I don't agree with. And I think in this country, we need to hear that message more often. Because look, whenever I talk about having friends who voted for Trump, I get tons of pushback. How could you talk to those horrible people? And look, in everything but politics, we agree on most things. On most community things that we do, we agree. We just don't talk about politics a lot. And the ones that I do, I enjoy the back and forth because I need to know what they're thinking, much like I think they need to know what I'm thinking. So if we completely shut each other off and out, I don't know. I'm not there. But I do think what Kimmel, some of the lines that he made were important. Like, you know, the show's not important. What matters is that we're in a country where you can have a show like his, like mine. And that's important. He also pointed out that the government shouldn't be the one permitted to say what can or can't be seen on TV. And you know, I think that's a pretty big thing. And he talked about, you know, Ted Cruz and the people who he disagree with, but came out, you know, courageously and said, look, you know, this could happen to any one of us. As he said, if Ted Cruz can't express himself freely, it impacts all of us. And he did talk about the fact that he gets threats, as I do. He says, look, selfishly, I frequently receive threats. I recognize that these threats do not come from the kind of individuals on the right whom I respect and care for. Same. I completely understand it. And he says, look, our leaders celebrate Americans losing their jobs just because he can't take a joke. I thought was a good shot. I also thought the fact that you had a sitting president go on his Truth Social and attack ABC, saying, I can't believe ABC fake news gave Jimmy Kimmel his job back. The White House was told by ABC that his show was canceled. He goes on to say, I think we're going to test ABC out on this. Let's see how we do. Last time I went after them, they gave me $16 million. Now, remember, I said when they settled over George Stephanopoulos that you can't appease bullies and that this was going to turn around and bite him in the behind. And here we are. He's suing everybody because he thinks he can just shake them down. And I thought what Kimmel did was a very good, very effective dare. Go ahead. Do what you got to do. Come after me if you have to. Because this free speech thing, the right seems to hold on to it a lot more than the left. And the left holds on to it pretty strongly. When you've got people like Joe Rogan coming out and saying, you know, I definitely don't think that the government should be involved ever in dictating what a comedian can or cannot say in a monologue. He says, you are crazy for supporting this because it'll be used on you. He gets it. And I'm not a huge Rogan fan. But in this, he understands, as I've said all along, going to go after Kimmel. Eventually, it's going to be Rogan. It's going to be everyone. It may not be someone that you like today, but it will be if you give them this kind of power. And this is kind of a moment. And I said, look, you know, the other day, I said, this is a victory. It's not an enormous victory. But it is a victory. It is the show that we, the people, have power. The real victory is going to come in shutting this president down in the kind of shakedowns that he's perpetrating. Especially when the fact of the matter is that this is another major distraction from the reality that the economy is not doing well. And that the majority, the vast majority of people understand the economy is not doing well. Just 37% of adults say that Trump is handling the economy okay. That's down from 43% just a month ago. Understand, grocery prices have spiked over the last month. Fastest pace last month since the peak of the pandemic. Job growth has crawled to a crawling sprawl. The tariffs, the mass deportations, that's going to make everything that much worse. Hasn't hit home yet. And the reality is the majority of us think that we're in the midst of a political crisis. Quinnipiac just had a poll. 79% of voters say we're in a political crisis. Only 18 say not. 82% of voters think the way people talk about politics these days contributes to violence. So when you've got politicians who are pushing more heated rhetoric, when you've got a president saying, we're going to go after, fill in the blank. Do you think that's good for the country? Do you think it's good for democracy? Do you think it's good for the economy? Do you think it's good for you? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Could it get any worse? rick@therickSmithShow.com. Tell me what you think. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, Rich Ojeda is going to be here to share some thoughts on his congressional campaign, also the speech from the UN, and, well, anything else we can get to. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, I didn't see this one coming. I didn't. Not, at least not right away. You know, we talked about Oklahoma, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. Wanting to put, Turning Points chapters in every school in the state. Also, you know, the guy who wanted to buy the Trump Bibles, wanting to put now... I guess it's memorial plazas on university campuses dedicated to Charlie Kirk. And look, I said this from the beginning. They're going to slap his name all over everything. They're going to try and attempt to canonize him. There'll be holiday talks. There'll be all that. I didn't get his own coin. Evidently, House Republicans are planning to introduce a piece of legislation in the coming days to direct the U.S. Treasury to mint 400,000 silver dollar coins with Charlie Kirk's likeness on the coin. And you go, how about all those kids that get shot in schools? How about anyone? But it shows you it's not about Charlie Kirk. It's not about free speech. It's about political opportunism. And here to share some thoughts on, well, all of the craziness we're living through and maybe how we get through it, I've asked my good friend Rich Ojeda to come share some thoughts. Rich is host of Ojeda Live, a nightly hit over on Facebook and YouTube, 8:30 each evening. Also, congressional candidate. You want to get up and do something? He's running for Congress in the 9th Congressional District there in North Carolina. Rich, thanks for taking time for us.
I always enjoy being on your show, Rick.
So what do you make of this? There's going to be a Charlie Kirk coin.
Look, you know what? I'm not going to sit here and martyr anybody. I will tell you that I hate that his children will always be able to go online and watch their father be murdered. I hate that. But let me tell you something. I'm not going to sit here and try to act like the things that he said was things that I agree with. You know, here is a person that believed that if a person of color had climbed to the top of any ladder, they had to have gotten there only because of DEI. I disagree with that. I served in the military with lots of people of color that climbed the ladder. And you know what? They worked their butts off. They did what they had to do. And they were warriors. And it just sickens me when you know, we have people that are going to sit here and spew racism, and now, you know, they're going to try to act like, you know, this guy was the second coming of Christ, and he wasn't, and I refuse to act like it was.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, there's so many things Congress should be doing, and they're not. I don't know that this is, I don't know that this is what they should be doing in this moment. Maybe trying to figure out how to calm the temperature down a little bit, much like Kimmel did last night. I thought on his return to late night, I thought he did a really good job. I thought it was, you know, kind of a cooling of the temperature, but also not backing down from the bully that is our president.
This administration is absolute crooked, and it's the worst administration to ever, you know, exist. They do nothing except, you know, let's change the Gulf of America the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. Let's change the Department of Defense to the Department of War. You're not doing anything. You're not benefiting anybody. You're not elevating anybody out of poverty. You're not helping the farmers. You're not helping people that are sick. I mean, what do we have? We've got people in Congress that are doing absolutely nothing. And this is the kind of garbage that they're spewing to try to act like they're doing things. You know, I mean, I want to see action. I want to see things happen. And that's one of the reasons why I'm running for Congress. And if I am successful in Congress and I win, I'm going to expect to see things get done. I'm going to expect that to happen. And if Democrats start dragging their feet, I'm going to drag them through the daggone mud.
No, it's what we need, Rich. Done. We need to get things done, because all we keep getting out of Congress right now is division, is things that rip us apart. And this isn't unifying the country. All this is doing is branding, like Republicans do masterfully. Give them credit where credit is due, but it's not doing anything to make lives better. It's not making, certainly not doing anything to make something like this from happening in the future. Not likely. So for me, this is just another one of those stunts to take advantage of a crisis and to rewrite a little bit of history.
Well, of course, they've automatically, when something happens, oh, it's the Democrats. And then it turns out it was a conservative that grew up in a conservative family from a conservative state that went to a conservative church that actually killed him. And, you know, that's the way that it is. But, you know, I'm just so sick and tired of the nothing getting done. You know, we polled everybody about Project 2025 and people chose not to look or read it. No, by the way, we even gave you the page numbers to show you where the horrible stuff was. And now they're implementing Project 2025, and it is hurting the American people, to include their folks the most. Make no mistake about it, these red states that are welfare states, the moment that you push Gavin Newsom to that point where he says, you know what, I'm going to stop sending my money from my state to Washington, D.C. Then New York will do the same thing. Illinois will do the same thing. Massachusetts will do the same thing. New Hampshire, Vermont will. And welfare states like West Virginia, Kentucky, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Tennessee, South Carolina, Arkansas, Oklahoma are going to go under. Going to go under. And oh, by the way, we told you so.
Do you think that's really going to happen, though? Do you think, because, you know, this is one of those things that I love having these mental exercises, but I just don't see Democrats, I don't see them following through on that.
No, look, that's what I'm saying. You know, there's a lot of people that are new that are running for office on the Democratic ticket. And you know what? Maybe that's what we need. We need some new blood in Washington, D.C., because we've got too many people there that absolutely claim that they're fighting for the people, but when the time comes, they sit silent. And look, I'm done with that. You know, I make it to Washington, D.C., I'm going to be on day one saying, okay, when are we going to go ahead and overturn Citizens United? And I expect that to happen. You know, I want free 2 years of college for community college for any student. I want child care for parents out there. These are things that we have been speaking about. And when we get the power, and oh, by the way it looks, we're not just going to take back the power. We're going to take back the power with a serious majority. Then we shouldn't have no problem pushing and passing any legislation that we need that's going to elevate people's lives in this country. And that's how we get our country back. And that's how we convince all of these Trumpaloons that are now in a world of hurt when we actually help elevate them also.
So let me ask you, because that's an important point. I have a lot of friends who are like, you know, once the tide turns, we should be rubbing people's noses in it. Is this what you're talking about?
Look, it's not, I don't want to rub people's noses in it. Look, I don't have a problem telling people, we told you. We told you, but you refused to listen. But let me tell you something. I don't like that farmers are losing their legacy. I also don't like the fact that J.D. Vance is part of a group that swoops in and buys up all of those farms, because that's unacceptable. You know, these people are important. I'm not for always bailing people out. But once again, you know, I mean, I want us to do things that are going to help people. If we take back power and we push legislation that benefits all the Americans, not just the Democrats, that's how Republicans start realizing that, hey, these guys aren't so bad. You know, you can be conservative and realize that Donald Trump lied to you. Look at the farmers that are going under.
Yeah.
Donald Trump, you thought Donald Trump was going to take care of you, and he absolutely stabbed you in the back. So wake up.
Yeah. No,
wake up.
Now I got to ask you the other part of this, because, you know, you saw Trump speak at Kirk's memorial, and the line that's getting the most attention is the fact that Trump says, I hate my opponents. I think that is the first time a president has said that in the history of this country, that I hate my opponents. I may not like them, but to come out and say, I hate them, I'm not going to work with them, I'm not going to do any of this stuff.
I disagree. I disagree with Republicans, but I don't want ill will to them. You know, I want them to wake up is what I want. But once again, this is Donald Trump, and Donald Trump does not even know. And oh, by the way, this is his second term, and he still hasn't learned that the moment that you raise your hand and you take that oath, every single American in this country becomes your constituent. Donald Trump doesn't understand that. He's not smart enough to understand that, because he is mentally deficient. So Donald Trump thinks that if you're a Democrat, you're the enemy. Yeah. Those Democrats are your constituents, and it's your job to take care of all Americans, not just the ones that bow down and lick your boots.
So let me ask you this. I'm sure you saw the UN speech. And I'll be honest, as I watched it, it was embarrassing. It was, you know, basically the kind of caricature of the ugly American that friends of mine who have lived overseas claims that how the world sees us. You know, we're smarter than you. We're better than you. You know, we know more than you. We're wonderful. You suck. You know, that kind of a caricature. He went out and performed it live. I'm curious, you got some thoughts.
Every time he opens his mouth, he inserts his foot. But for him to go to the United Nations with his 37% approval rating that is in free fall mode and tell world leaders that their countries are going to hell and that they need to what? Do the same thing he's doing? I mean, it's an embarrassment. And everybody knows that the communications that were going on amongst those people in that room were literally, is he serious? Is this guy really this stupid? And the truth is he is.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is an absolute buffoon. Donald Trump is not a smart man. Everything about Donald Trump is a lie, and Donald Trump is destroying our country. And he has surrounded himself with sycophants like Stephen Miller and them that are absolutely helping him to destroy this country.
Yeah, did you see Miller's speech? Did you see the Miller speech at Kirk's memorial?
Yes,
you know, I'm going to steal Amali Ivan's line here. I'm not going to steal her line, because I don't know that it was better in the original German, but I know it was part of the original German.
Yes, he is literally our Goebbels is what he is. And, you know, he is a racist, and he gets away with it. But make no mistake about it. There's going to come a time when these people are going to have to stand and account for what they have done and for what they have said. There's going to come a time when Pete Hegseth is going to be held accountable for what he has done to so many people in this country. And they should be allowed to sue him. You know, those who have lost their careers, you know, this is a free country. You know, the things that these people are doing, Kristi Noem, you know, they snatched people off the streets, gave them no due process, and sent them packing. We sent a Democrat to prison for 11 years, and the Democrats were behind saying, yep, he needs to go to prison because of bribery. Tom Holman has been caught accepting $50,000 in a brown paper bag, and yet they shut down the investigation and think that that's going to save him. Make no mistake about it. When we take back power, and please help send me to Washington, D.C., because I'm going to call for that investigation. And then we're going to deal with Tom Holman because he is a criminal.
But here's
he
the thing.
Absolutely participated in bribery.
Here's the thing, Rich. You know, I got to tell you, I'm looking at him going, you know, $50,000 isn't a lot of money. For most people, it is. But it's small potatoes compared to what this administration is doing. Look, I want him prosecuted absolutely without question. If he took the money, there's a place for him right next to Menendez, as you pointed out. But the numbers that we're seeing the rest of the administration, the Trump family getting away with, the stories that we're hearing, I don't know, man. They're much bigger fish to fry.
Everything is going to come to call. There will be investigations in all of this. And I'm going to tell you right now, I expect for these investigations to take place. And if I get to Washington, D.C., and Democrats try to tell me that, you know, it's not worth it, it is worth it. It is worth it because we cannot let no crime go unpunished. So I don't care. We're going to go after these people. And it's not just the bribery with Tom Holman. It's the fact that he absolutely has snatched people off the streets with no due process. Do you know that 2/3 of the people that were in Alligator Alcatraz are unaccounted for? Unaccounted for. Their families don't know where they're at. Where are they? These are the kind of things that absolutely must be answered.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just the Epstein files that needs to come out. The Holman files needs to come out. All of these crimes that have taken place needs to come out. And you know what? If we're going to sit here and we're going to get the majority, and we're not going to use that to right the wrongs, then I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to go to nose with these Democrats.
So let me ask you.
I'm a Democrat.
But no, let me ask you, because, you know, here's the reality, and this is kind of what I've been saying. Look, Trump has broken down the norms, broken down past practices, broken down the guardrails. Should Democrats come back in? Because the knock I get is Republicans move the pendulum to their side, Democrats come back, never move it back. And then this keeps going on, administration after administration, to where now we're much further to the right than we've been at any time in my lifetime. Is this a moment for the Democrats to go, look, we're going to take power and we're swinging it all the way back?
We're going to take power. And then, besides righting the wrongs, we also have to put countermeasures in place to make sure that we will never, ever find ourselves in a situation ever again where criminals, where the dumbest amongst us are leading the daggone show, because that's exactly what's happened right now. The dumbest amongst us are the ones that are in power, and people that absolutely will do anything and everything to have that power. Kristi Noem needs to be called to the carpet. Pete Hegseth, called to the carpet. All of these people need called to the carpet. It's unacceptable.
So let me ask you last line of questioning, because clearly you're out on the campaign trail. You're talking to people all across North Carolina's 9th Congressional District. Are you getting a sense that they're seeing what you're saying? Are you getting a sense that they're paying attention to this? Or is it, look, life's tough. The prices are going up. Cost of living's, you know, getting harder to make ends meet. You know, jobs are going away. Is that where they're focused? I'm curious what you're running into.
I have had Republicans and independents big time. Done. They're done. They're done with this administration. You know, there's still people out there that are going to hold on. There's also people out there that, once again, if all you do is drink from the fountain of Fox, then you're never going to know the corruption that's going on. And oh, by the way, remember, Fox had to pay $787 million for lying, but Fox News doesn't tell their viewers that they had to pay $787 million. So we still have a lot of people that are watching the Fountain of Fox, and even though all these things are going on that are horrible, there's still some people that are holding on. But once again, even Fox News is talking about the Epstein files and how this stuff can no longer continue being pushed away.
Yep.
This is something that has to surface, and it's going to surface. And when it surfaces, I don't care. I don't care if it's billionaires. When they get caught, they need to be held accountable. You know, there's so many things that we need to try to do in this country to make sure that this stuff never happens again. And one of them is overturning Citizens United and stop allowing billionaires to buy our elections. Amen. And that's exactly what we are having. You know, we need to bring back the fairness doctrine that says if you're calling yourself news media, you've got to show integrity. And if you don't, you get removed from the airs. That's the kind of stuff that needs pushed, and I'm willing to push that stuff.
There you go. Ojeda4NC.com, the website, if you want to check out Rich's campaign. Rich Ojeda, I appreciate the time. Always great. Always energetic. Thanks so much.
Always enjoy it, my brother.
Our good friend Rich Ojeda. Again, Ojeda4NC.com, the website, if you want to take a look at what he's doing and maybe throw in a little bit. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
You're listening to 98.9 WXCO, Wausau's home for Matinere on Air, weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A clear sky tonight, lows in the low 50s. With sunshine for tomorrow, beautiful day, a high in the low 70s. Upper 70s for the high Saturday with sun. Staying dry with more sunshine for Sunday, highs stay in the 70s. Currently, it's 66.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Tom Hartman here. Democracy is not a spectator sport, so join me each and every weekday right here on Civic Media for the Tom Hartman program from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Covering the news of the day and sharing ways for you to get off the sidelines and get active in your community, because change starts with you. Get involved and tune in to the Tom Hartman program Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on your local Civic Media radio station.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday on the program, we talked about the guy who's the superintendent of instruction. I believe that's the proper title for Ryan Walters in Oklahoma. The guy who, you may remember, he got a lot of attention because he was going to put the Trump Bible or something that fit the parameters of the Trump Bible or the Lee Greenwood Bible, which Trump had some to do with, in every classroom. Every public school classroom was going to have the Constitution and the Bible in the same book, which, you know, lots of questions. He's now come out in the aftermath of Kirk's murder and said, you know what, we're going to use public education to push an ideological message. And I want you to see what Ryan Walters said, because I think it's really very important to see what the superintendent of instruction in Oklahoma had to say.
I'm excited to announce today that every Oklahoma high school will have a Turning Point USA chapter. We have seen the outpouring from parents, teachers, and students that want to be engaged in the meaningful work going on at Turning Point. They want their young people to be engaged in a process that understands free speech, open engagement, dialogue about American greatness, a dialogue around American values. We're so excited to partner with Turning Point USA with this initiative. For far too long, we have seen radical leftists with the teachers' union dominate classrooms and push woke indoctrination on our kids. They fight parents' rights, they push parents out of the classroom, and they lie to our kids about American history. What we're going to continue to do is make sure that our kids understand American greatness, engage in civic dialogue, and have that open discussion. We will continue to do all that we can to make sure Oklahoma students have the best education possible.
And by everything he can do, because remember, Oklahoma is, as I'm looking at the numbers, either second last or last in the country in education. Per pupil spending at the very bottom. You could literally be doing anything else to help students, but this kind of political pandering, this ideological pandering, I got a question. And that's why I've asked Mary Catherine Ricker to come share some thoughts with us. Mary Catherine is the executive director of the Albert Schenker Institute. She was also a classroom teacher, commissioner of education for the state of Minnesota, as well as an executive vice president with the American Federation of Teachers. So somebody who I kind of think knows a little bit about education. Mary Catherine, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, Rick, thanks for having me. I appreciate you calling.
So I got to get your gut reaction to this, whatever that was.
I will say my first reaction is to not really react and offer oxygen to that, but to say what adults in children's lives, what their reaction, particularly if you have that sort of platform, if you have any sort of power, is to like the sort of gesture I would want from any sort of adult leader would be after a horrific assassination that had a video that was grotesquely spread like wildfire across social media channels. So many of our young people are on, is to actually say, if you are an adult in a child's life, please check in on your young people, see what you can do to support them. If they are grieving, as they are grieving, please offer them support. If they were traumatized by that video, if it happened to cross their social media feed, let's make sure that our students have the resources first to address the sort of shock and impact that loss of life, as well as the impersonal way it got shared, get that addressed to our young people first.
Yeah, see, my first reaction to that is that's because you care about kids and about education as a whole. I know a lot of people, and I don't know what's in Ryan Walter's heart, but from the outside, it looks like this is pure political pandering, not letting a good crisis go to waste and using this to push their ideology, which, oddly enough, they're claiming that folks like you, teachers like you, indoctrinating our children with your woke ideology, Mary Catherine.
That, I mean, it was certainly hurtful. I know every state in the nation has state standards that teachers are committed to teaching to. And those state standards are shaped by people like the superintendent of public instruction and the state legislature. And if you have a state school board or you have a commissioner of education, those state standards that teachers are directed to teach to are developed by adults, and teachers go into teaching to meet the needs of students. And they understand they have a responsibility to teach to state standards. And those state standards are what teachers honestly show up to school every day to address and to measure how they're doing, how their students are doing, how they remediate, how they maybe repeat a lesson or change something. But really, there is such a dedication to those state standards. Teachers work on them together. They work on them with their administrators. They spend their summers looking at revised standards so they know what they're doing the following school year. I cannot stress enough that is the focus teachers bring to their workday, is how am I going to meet the needs of students doing the job I've been directed to do with the standards that the state has handed me to teach to my students in my license area.
It's like you were looking at my notes, because, you know, my next statement, my next comment was going to be, if what you're saying, Mr. Walters, is true, that you're fighting woke ideology and you're doing all this stuff, and it's gotten this far out of hand, in his words, that it's gotten this bad, is that not your failure? And is that maybe not a reason that the folks of Oklahoma should be looking for someone new? Because I keep hearing all of these assaults at public education, all of these attacks on teachers, and all of this stuff, and I'm going, you know, for those of us who know, there's an administration that oversees all this stuff. There's school boards, as you pointed out. There's state regulations, as you pointed out. There's all this stuff. How did this happen without everybody?
Teachers can be observed at any time by their administrators. I know from Minnesota, in state statute, administrators have a responsibility to observe teachers and measure their teaching. I imagine that it is very similar in just about every state in the nation. And when I was a teacher, my door was always open. I was always inviting, whether it was local leaders to come in, our superintendent to come in, the, you know, our administrative assistants, you know, our assistant principals, you know, my classroom was an open door. And I know a lot of teachers who feel the same way. And there has been an incredible shift in teaching that started when I still had the privilege of being a full-time classroom teacher, of opening doors, of teachers watching each other teach, of teachers, again, working together in small groups to make sure that we were teaching lessons, learning from each other, often with a principal sitting in, but not always with an administrator sitting in. And so what you see when you're actually in a classroom is really dedicated teaching and a dedication to meet the needs of our students, or we wouldn't be doing that work.
Yeah, no, look, and I can attest to that because, you know, when our children were going through, especially elementary school and into middle school, both my wife and I spent a lot of time helping the teacher in the classroom. So we got to see firsthand, and it's something that I encourage every parent to do, to get involved and to help their teachers any way that they can, and to be part of the instruction in the classroom. We used to go in and help kids read. I mean, for people who have done that, they have a much different vision or version of what public education is from someone like Mr. Walters, or the people who would push this idea that Mary Catherine, you're just woke and we need to somehow either handcuff you even further or do away with you altogether. It's kind of frightening to me.
It is troubling. And at the same time, like my faith is in the classroom teachers and paraprofessionals and administrators who right now are probably still sitting at their kitchen tables getting ready for tomorrow and figuring out like what's the last minute work I need to do on a lesson, or the resources I need to grab right away when I get back to school tomorrow morning, or they're just wrapping up because it's an administrator who was at school until the end of the volleyball game, or someone who's just wrapping up a fall parent teacher conference tonight. Like right now, there are educators across the country who are getting ready to meet the needs of students tomorrow. Yeah. And that's where it is, where I put my faith. It is where I put my effort to support teaching and learning in our public schools, because I know when teaching and learning is supported, it makes a difference in all of our communities.
As you were talking, I was remembering an interview that I did with an Oklahoma teacher back during the Red for Ed strike era.
Okay.
And
yeah.
She said that, you know, she used to race into the school at the beginning of the year so that she could find the chairs that had feet on all four legs. And that was her number one focus. Nothing else. Just, I got to get four feet on the legs, because one missing foot on that chair, the whole classroom is going to be disrupted and it's going to be just chaos. And I'm going, maybe we could get Mr. Walters, instead of, you know, this, instead of doing ideological stuff like this, maybe he could take on the job of making sure all the chairs have feet. That seems something productive.
I have a similar story. I was teaching and I really wanted tables for my students so that they could sit in small groups. And I had gotten some great professional development about small group instruction. And so I had been thinking about a way I was going to have sort of more student to student dialogue. And so I wanted tables instead of desks, so that students would always have the opportunity to sort of turn and talk and work together as well as work as a large group. And I never got them. And the week after I earned my national board certification for the first time, tables arrived in my classroom. And I didn't know, I was like, if
victory,
that's all I had to do was earn my board certification. I don't know that I could have done it much sooner in my career than I did, but correlation, causation, I'm not sure, but I have my tables now, and it made a difference. It was just having them was a fun way for me to teach.
Where were you when I was a kid? the teachers that I had were all closed door types, with habits and big sticks. I get beaten a lot as a child. And I'm glad that educationally we have gone away from that a little bit or completely.
100%.
I still remember.
This is why, to your point about the closed door versus now, this is the evolution of the teaching profession. Teaching has not remained static. Every generation of teachers has learned more about better meeting the needs of kids. They've learned from the research about how to better meet the needs of students. They've learned from the experience of past teachers. They've learned from the science. I mean, this incredible science of reading movement across the country, which, as you know, the Albert Schenker Institute has been analyzing the reading laws that have been passing in states across the country for the last 5 years. This is helping to strengthen that teaching and learning because our teachers and our administrators and our paraprofessionals are learning from what the research says about the best ways to meet the needs of students. This is what education should do. Yeah. We should continue to learn and get better so that every generation of teaching and learning is actually stronger than the last one.
Yeah, if you could have, if you wanted to, I should say I've never had a bad teacher. I've had some of the less inspiring. I've had some that were really, truly inspiring that even, it's been a lot of years since I've been in school that I still think back to. But I have had some brutal ones. Some of Sister Mary St. Leo, wherever you are, you're on a list. But the thought back then was we could beat reading into you or beat multiplication tables into you. And now we've learned.
And no.
And now we're doing better. So last line of questioning I've got for you.
Out of my profession. No, that is not a way to meet the needs of kids.
Last line of questioning I've got for you, because, what we're seeing right now is we're seeing a push towards using the murder of Charlie Kirk, this crisis as a reason to attack higher education right now. And it's going to trickle down to public education, K-12. This is an opportunity to go after and destroy and privatize and profitize and do all of those things. So what's the message, do you think, for citizens? Because, look, nobody is celebrating Charlie Kirk's murder, or no one should be.
That's right.
But we shouldn't allow that tragedy to be used as a tool to destroy our public education and our education system.
Our first reaction should be one of profound sadness that this happened. And from there, doing everything we can to figure out how to make everyone as safe as possible. This tragedy, just the horrificness of it, is unfortunately in a series of political violence that my home state of Minnesota was not immune to at all. It is also in a line of violence on our school campuses. Again, my home state not immune to the school shooting that happened just earlier this school year. We have an opportunity in this country to have a conversation about how we're keeping people safe, how we're keeping our young people safe. What does protection look like in our education spaces? How are we keeping our schools? How are we keeping our students safe in our schools, whether they be pre-K-12 through higher education? And then, I see that as sort of a concentric conversation of safety then leads to the healthiest learning conditions. When our students don't have to worry about going to an event on their campus, or they don't have to worry about going to an event at their elementary school or at their high school or go to class, they get to concentrate on learning. And it's all nested together. And I think if we're going to have an honest conversation about something right now, it should be, what are we doing to keep our students safe? And then, of course, certainly concentrated in this conversation on, keeping them safe in their learning environments.
No, absolutely. And in my view, it's always been two wrongs don't make a right. It was horribly wrong what happened to Charlie Kirk, but it's also horribly wrong to do what someone like Ryan Walters is trying to do and others are trying to do to education in this country. And it's our responsibility to stand up and right those wrongs. But Mary Catherine, I appreciate you taking time for us. Keep up the great work. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thanks for talking. Take care.
Mary Catherine Ricker, she is the executive director of the Albert Schenker Institute. You can check out their website, schenkerinstitute.org. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1961. That was the day when Herbert Lee was murdered just outside of Liberty, Mississippi. He was a successful black cotton farmer who became active in efforts to register black voters. Lee had 9 children. He was one of the few area black farmers with a vehicle. This made him very valuable to the voter registration movement. Lee would drive Bob Moses from the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee around Amet County to reach unregistered voters. It was dangerous work to register black sharecroppers and farmers in rural Mississippi. Attempts by black residents to gain legal or economic equality were met with threats and violence. On the morning of his murder, Lee had come to the Westbrook Cotton Gin just outside of Liberty to drop off a truckload of cotton. There, he was met by a childhood friend, Mississippi State Representative E.H. Hurst. Hurst came up to the truck and started shouting at Lee. Then he took out a gun and shot Herbert Lee in the head. Witnesses stated that Lee had brandished a tire iron at Hurst. Hurst claimed self-defense. A jury declared the murder was justifiable homicide. Lewis Allen, a black farmer and timber worker, was one who had testified about witnessing the shooting. Later, he recanted his testimony, saying that he had lied about Lee threatening Hurst because he feared for his life. After Allen began to talk about what he actually saw that day, he became the victim of harassment and beatings. Finally, on January 31st, 1964, he too was gunned down in his driveway. No one was ever convicted or even arrested for his murder. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So, a new hotspot in Washington, D.C. Evidently, Trump's doing such a bang-up job as president, starting a nightclub. Evidently, the new hot hangout in the capital city is the Rose Garden, or as they're calling it, the Rose Garden Club. Evidently, we've turned the iconic lawn outside the Oval Office into what they're calling a taxpayer-supported imitation of the patio at Mag-a-Lago. And you know, because, hey, he needs to feel at home. Hey, look. If Nixon can have a bowling alley, why can't Trump have a patio? But what it is now is it's a place for all all of his political allies, business executives, administration folks to come hang out, rub elbows, and of course, you know, not be seen plotting and scheming. And look, you get to sit on the new stone patio. You get food from the White House kitchen, even a playlist that Donald Trump himself has curated. Yeah, it just is what it is. Now, what I find interesting, the UN speech, kind of funny, in that the teleprompter thing actually got some response yesterday when I brought it up, because evidently I was the only one who remembered Donald Trump mocking Barack Obama for using a teleprompter. I guess I was the only one who remembered my MAGA minions, you know, saying Obama couldn't say a word without a teleprompter. And there you've got Trump whining and complaining. Now the escalator stopped. That's something else. They had some audio issues, I understand, during the trip to the UN General Assembly meeting. And they're calling it triple sabotage. And Trump, on the Truth Social, because that's how we do things now. There aren't press releases. They're just Trump angrily, putting out on his platform. He truthed out. A real disgrace took place at the United Nations yesterday. Not one, not two, but three very sinister events. He said the people that did it should be arrested. Well, now we find out that the escalator probably was Trump's videographer, who evidently ran ahead of him and triggered the stop mechanism at the top. Yeah, it may have inadvertently triggered the safety function. Oops. And the teleprompter, which we now find out, was operated by the White House. So if there was sabotage, it was from within the House. It was Trump's people. It was the very best people. Also, Vice President J.D. Vance did the triple goose step backwards. Evidently said that Trump was joking. You remember when I mentioned earlier that Trump hates his enemies and all of that? Trump said, I think it's interesting if you go back and watch the full speech, what the president was trying to do in this very humorous and very unique way was highlight how hard it is for us to forgive our enemies. What? Not what I got at all. I got his words, which were very direct, very short, in language that a third grader could understand, because that's right about the vocabulary level. I'm not seeing the underlying between the lines messaging. And look, had his actions not been what they've been over the last decade, maybe, but really, kind of makes you wonder. And understand, this is the MO. Says things, they walk back. Says things, they run back. Says things, blame it on somebody else. Says something, never said it. Never did it. Never take responsibility. And this is the mastery of what Republicans have morphed into. They used to be the party of personal responsibility. I remember, just like I remember that when Hillary was first lady and Bill Clinton gave her health care to kind of lead as a thing, when Hillary Care came out, the Heritage Foundation came up with what is basically the Obamacare. And in the Heritage Foundation version was a personal mandate, because conservatives back then used to believe in personal responsibility. Not anymore. These aren't your parents and grandparents conservatives. No, no. These are radicals. These are vultures. These are Wall Street types who just want more for themselves and to screw the little guy. This is about power and control. It's not about good governance. So this idea that, oh, well, he was trying to unite us or talk about how, not buying it even a little bit. Not even a little bit. Also, there was a shooting in Dallas, I believe. And at an immigration and customs enforcement field office. And it's one of those moments where another terrible tragedy. But again, the spin that you're getting, I'm not buying. The argument right away is, oh, it was a lefty. It was a leftist. He put anti-fascist stuff on bullets or whatever the rule, whatever the latest version was. And I'm with Mark Vesey, the Democrat from Texas, who doubts that the FBI will lead any kind of thorough investigation into this. I'm with him. I don't trust him at all. But the reality, it doesn't pass the smell test. Because as I understand, the people who were shot and killed, weren't ICE officers or agents. They were detainees. Seems kind of not what you would expect. But again, the knee-jerk reaction is always to blame the other. It's infuriating. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at the RickSmithShow.com. Tell me what you think. Is this where we're going? If you missed any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At Rick at the RickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. A federal grand jury indicts former FBI Director James Comey on charges of making a false statement and obstruction of justice. He says in an online video,
"My family and I have known for years that there are costs to standing up to Donald Trump, but we couldn't imagine ourselves living any other way. We will not live on our knees, and you shouldn't either."
The charges stem from testimony Comey gave about an investigation into ties between then-candidate Trump's 2016 presidential campaign and Russia. CBS's Jake Rosen.
The indictment was returned in the Eastern District of Virginia as the clock ticked down on a five-year statute of limitations for charges arising out of his September 2020 testimony to Congress, which was set to expire Tuesday, September 30th.
President Trump saying his Chinese counterpart approves, signs an executive order okaying a framework to keep TikTok operating under U.S. ownership. Vice President J.D. Vance.
This deal really does.